Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
You know, I listen to Bickley and Murata. Terrific show, by the way. I really enjoy it.
Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
To the world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning. Happy Tuesday, Valley sports fans. Wake up, everybody. How is everyone doing here?
We're doing well. I'm doing well.
Jared, are you awake? Ruthless, are you doing good?
So good.
So good.
So good.
So good.
Energy.
So good.
The energy in this little quadrant here is palpable.
Oh, it always is. Especially in that corner over there. That one. Over there. I don't know if you've seen this. Have you guys ever heard of the sport of toe wrestling?
You probably saw
the story this morning.
No.
A 64-year-old dynasty titan of toe wrestling lost. And there's a story about it. Toe wrestling.
Titan of toe wrestling?
64-year-old dude. Apparently, he's got something like Unleash the Beast tattooed on his foot. Apparently, what you do is you lock your big toe with another dude and you wrestle. Jarrett, you sound familiar with this, no?
Yeah, imagine Jeff Van Gundy.
Oh!
He can't handle a hug? How does he feel about toe wrestling?
Yeah, this is a story on an aggregate website that Vinny and I check through every day. So this dude who's 64.
Wiki feet?
He's like a dynasty. Yeah, right. He's like a dynasty in toe wrestling. Now, toe wrestling, I learned, started in the United Kingdom, probably in some pub between drunk dudes, I'm guessing.
Fighting over beans.
That's a safe bet.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Fighting over beans and, you know, sliced tomatoes, stewed tomatoes.
That's right.
This dude, this 64-year-old, is so into toe wrestling that he actually had his toenail surgically removed because it becomes too painful during competition.
Wow, yeah, sure.
The stuff you learn about, again, you have made it a bit to make up sports. You don't even have to make them up. There are sports out there that are just so stupid.
Wow, here it is.
Yeah, see? Toe wrestling!
That is disgusting.
It is disgusting.
Is there...
Who wants to lock big toes with another dude?
With anyone?
Well,
no.
What do you mean, well?
If you're going to put a part of your body on someone else's toe... Putting your toe on someone else's toe is not...
What's wrong with arm wrestling? What's wrong with arm wrestling? Why do you have to lock toes?
Yeah, the 64-year-old 17-time world champion
has
finally defeated Alan Nasty Nash.
Nasty Nash? I wonder where he got that name. I wonder
G-N-A-S?
What his feet look like. Yeah,
so G-N-A-S.
Right. Yeah.
Is there money in this sport?
I don't know.
Just love of the game. Sorry, come on.
Love of the game. Yeah.
It's not... Again,
I don't know how you guys feel about this. I know how you feel. I've seen your footwear.
Yeah.
I'm of the camp that men should not be exposing their feet in public.
I've always been.
Yes, I am specifying men. I am.
Okay, Quentin.
Because we're gross.
I can't deny that. Men's feet are pretty disgusting.
Yes.
I would say feet, just period.
Feet in general, I'm not really a fan of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No.
You heard of leg wrestling, though, right?
What?
Yes.
I've heard of that.
Leg wrestling.
Behind the knees?
Yes.
Yeah.
What could possibly have
Not too far behind,
yeah,
I hope.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone down this road.
Start the show, Jared.
Start the toe, Jared.
The splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The splash.
Cannonball. The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
6.06 a.m. I've already learned something new today.
Mm-hmm. It's my goal every day, man.
Thank you, Bick.
You're welcome.
Suns make another addition to their coaching staff, reportedly hiring David Fizdale as a top assistant under new head coach Frank Vogel, according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. The 48-year-old Fizdale worked last season as an associate GM for the Utah Jazz, but will join the Suns bench after what Woj called a after Phoenix made what Woj called a significant financial play. Fizdale worked with Suns GM James Jones when he was assistant in Miami. While Jones was still a player, he also worked with Vogel in Los Angeles in the 21-22 season, and he has got head coaching experience with Memphis and the Knicks. Gambo put it out there that he might be making in the range of $1.3 to $1.5 million, so another mm-hmm. pricey addition to the coaching
and
staff.
And it still doesn't add up to Monty Williams.
Nope, not even close.
Take that for data.
That's our guy.
Suns have a press conference scheduled for noon today, at which time, I mean, it doesn't say it in the press release, but I'm assuming they're going to introduce Frank Vogel. Is that a fair assumption, Beck?
Yeah, that's a fair assumption.
Why aren't they promoting that? It says with James Jones. That's very strange.
Hey, we had the same reaction. Bob Myers is not going to L.A. to head up the Clippers basketball operations after losing GM Michael Winger to the Wizards. Clippers have promoted from within. They named Trent Redden the general manager and Mark Hughes to assistant, senior VP and assistant GM. D-backs on the road to begin a six-game stretch away from Chase Field. First stop, D.C. for a three-game set against the Nationals. Washington comes into the opener at 25-34, last place in the NL East, and surprisingly, that's not a horrible record. Just a half a game away from being the worst record in the National League. Mm. Things are pretty bunched up in the NL. Lefty Tommy Henry is coming off his best start as a big leaguer, gets the ball for Arizona against Nationals right-hander Jake Irvin. First pitch is at 4:05. Pregame coverage starts at 3:30 on the Arizona Sports app and ESPN 620. Cardinals back at OTAs for week three of work in their offseason program. Those workouts continue today. We'll run through Thursday. The next week, it's mandatory mini camp, which runs from Tuesday to Thursday. And at that time, we'll find out if safety Buda Baker shows up. Baker, of course, requested a trade this offseason, but recently told Cam Cox from 12 Sports that he'd definitely be there when the workouts became mandatory. He's not attended any of the OTAs, which started back on May 22nd. So we're getting closer to that.
We are. Yes.
The witching hour.
Well, listen, we've got nine teams that begin mandatory training camp today, which means football. When football no longer becomes voluntary, you know the season's getting close.
Yes. Cardinals also signed a couple of corners on Monday, inking Dylan Maben and Bobby Price to contracts. Maben has spent time with the Raiders, Vikings, Saints, and Falcons during his career. Price has been with the Lions for the last three seasons. Former Cardinals receiver Larry Fitzgerald, one of the first-time names up for induction to the College Football Hall of Fame. Fitzgerald played two seasons of college ball at Pittsburgh and was pretty good, I'd say. 161 catches for over 2,600 yards and 34 touchdowns. He finished third in the Heisman voting in his second season before embarking on a legendary pro career here in Arizona. Former Sun Devil Terrell Suggs also on the ballot for the first time. He had an NCAA record 24 sacks for ASU in 2002. Michael Vick and Randy Moss also first-time candidates. Luis Zendejas is on the ballot. Daryl Rogers, former coaches on the ballot. My question is this. Why is the waiting period so long for the College Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that's kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, why should there be a waiting period at all?
I mean, you wait for 5 years.
It's not like you're going back to college.
Yeah. I'm going back to college.
Oh, I tell you.
I mean, maybe they're, you know, Larry's still not retired from the NFL, so they wanted to give him some leeway.
He last played in college football in 2003. Is it a 20-year waiting period?
Maybe Larry never declared that he was done with college, like he never declared that he was done with the NFL.
Vegas dominated Florida in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final, winning 7-2 in a chippy affair that featured 148 penalty minutes.
Oh, boy.
And 10 misconduct penalties. Most of those were accrued by Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Two of the hardest hits you'll ever see in a hockey game, too. Jonathan Marchessault and Brett Howden each scored twice. Aiden Hill at 29 saves for the Knights, who lead that series 2-0. Game 3 is Thursday night in Florida. The final is set in the College Softball World Series. Florida State taking on Oklahoma and Oklahoma City. I don't know how closely you're following this, Vic.
I'm not.
Oklahoma has won 51 straight games. They're 59-1 on the year. That's amazing.
They must have a really good pitcher, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. They're going for their third straight title.
This is their fourth straight World Series final appearance. That series gets underway tomorrow night. French Open quarterfinal action today will feature a couple of huge matches on the men's side. Third-seeded Novak Djokovic faces Karen Khachanov, and then it is top-seeded Carlos Alcaraz facing fifth-seeded Stefanos Tsitsipas. And we got a Coco Gauff Iga Swiatek matchup coming.
You have not brought up the U.S. Open qualifying yesterday. Did you not see what was going on? They had Golf Channel had cameras in 10 different cities following around these guys who were trying to make the U.S. Open. It was fascinating. I've never seen this before in my life.
They've never covered it like that before?
No. No. Wow. They were literally popping from location to location.
Because I know we mentioned the Blocks.
Yeah.
Michael Block was in Toronto trying to qualify there and did not qualify. And his 18-year-old son was trying to qualify in Los Angeles.
Right.
He didn't qualify either.
Yeah. And it was like this weird mixture of like guys who used to be on the tour, like Kevin Streelman and Lucas Glover. They're playing at these courses with dudes who are amateurs, and that's what's so cool about the U.S. Open. It literally is open to everybody.
It's very, very open.
They mean it when they say open.
They sure do.
Without that, we never would have got the movie Tin Cup.
That's right.
Think about it.
It's true. Exactly.
There you go. There's your splash for Tuesday, June 6th. Coming up next, Suns continue to make splashes on the coaching staff. We'll get into the latest next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
I'll be honest with you. I thought Kevin Young was going to get this job because I know that Devin Booker is, you know, a huge, huge fan of his. And again, it's not just that he likes him. It's that he respects him and he believes in him. So I think it became a deal where, you know, Ishbia and the people he's listened to just didn't feel like with a team in this situation that they could go with a rookie NBA head coach.
Tim McMahon from the Hoop Collective podcast with Brian Windhorst talking about what happened with the Suns coaching staff. And look, Tim, we had Tim McMahon on the show recently. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of in the same boat. We expected Kevin Young to get this. And I know you were a believer in Devin Booker's support of Kevin Young. Mm-hmm. Being a big part of that. And, you know, I was reading a story, too, that, you know, the Milwaukee coaching search took a lot of people off guard. Adrian Griffin got that job. You know why he got that job? Because that's who Giannis wanted. Giannis didn't want to consider any other options for head coach.
And that's smart. That's the way you have to do it, especially in the NBA, especially when superstars like... If you have any inferiority complex about losing your superstar to a bigger market, you really have to do that.
But the ability for the Suns to keep Kevin Young on the staff
mm-hmm.
has to appease Devin Booker. I mean, you still get to work together. You're still getting the influence, still getting his X's and O's acumen, which was lauded by Devin Booker. And then yesterday, they make another splashy assistant coaching hire, reportedly getting David Fizdale, who was last year in the Utah Jazz front office. He had some coaching stints with Memphis and New York. He was working with Frank Vogel with Los Angeles on his last staff there. So they're putting together, you know, quite a staff.
Some real expertise.
Yes.
Some real preparation, some real experience. Yeah, listen, it's striking to me that in a team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, Matt Ishbia is going and doubling down on quality of staff the way that he is. And because, again, Kevin Durant is from Brooklyn, where he and Kyrie Irving famously said, we don't need coaching. What do we need coaching for?
And as of now, Chris Paul, too, another super veteran.
Yeah, yeah. And so this is, but this is also good, I think, because, you know, I think it's an area of the team that certainly could have used an upgrade. It's very generous in terms of, you know, just allocation. It's especially in Arizona, especially dealing with a lot of the low budget owners we've dealt with in the past. This is quite something. Matt Ishbia continues to kind of be the talk of the NBA for his aggressiveness. And so who doesn't get behind this? He's worked with Frank Vogel. He's coached LeBron. He had a stint with the Grizzlies when he had it rolling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the take that for data. So, yeah, I think this is another – I'm not sure if this is an impact statement, but this is another exclamation point.
It is. George Sedano, who works for ESPN LA and also does the ESPN national broadcasts, familiar with David Fizdale. He joined Burns and Gambo yesterday, talked about the connection between Fizdale and Frank Vogel.
There's only – I mean, I didn't hear him say that, but if you would have asked me that question before laying that out to me, I would have said there would only be two coaches that he would do that for. One was Frank Vogel, and two was his best friend in the entire world, which is Eric Spoelstra. You know what I'm saying? So, and, you know, they came up literally together through the video room in Miami. So I think that those would be the only two guys. And let's not forget, James Jones and him have a relationship
yes.
that goes back to the Miami days, too. So, you know, this is a move for Fizz, despite just tripling his salary, as you mentioned. I think the fact that there's familiarity, and let's face it, guys, regardless of what line of work you're doing, you want to work with people that you have commonality with, but that you have an actual relationship with, because it allows you, in theory, to be able to have honest conversations as much as you need to, right? And nobody's going to get offended or whatnot because there's a history between the parties. So I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Let's go back to the James Jones topic here, because I continue to find this absolutely fascinating that a new owner could come into this team that was Monty Williams plus James Jones plus Chris Paul, and the culture and the ascension of Devin Booker. It's really amazing to me that the owner can come in and go, I'm not digging this guy, but you I'm cool with.
Mm-hmm.
When those two guys were inseparable, it really says a lot either about James Jones' malleable personality, the ability to adjust from one type of owner to the other, to the other, to the other, fluid like water, flowing like water. So it could be that, or it could be the fact that James Jones, that Matt Ishbia is sympathetic to the fact that James Jones has never had access to real resources as a GM.
That's true, too.
Yeah, I was thinking about this yesterday because I don't know, it was a national team that was put together. Mikal Bridges and Tyrese Halliburton are part of it.
Yeah,
and
I'm part of the FIBA World Cup.
Yeah, that could have been part of the Suns nucleus right there. So there have been mistakes made along the way, but at the same time, I wonder. It's interesting to me how Monty and James were sort of a tag team combination. And the new owner vibed with one and not the other. Don't you find that fascinating?
Yes, absolutely, I do. But then again, you know what? In a year plus of trying times for the Suns, going back to last year's playoffs, when we were all dumbfounded at how dumbfounded they looked in Game 6 and Game 7,
uh-huh.
And you were one of the first people to start beating that drum. Look, something happened with the chemistry of this basketball team, and they went into this season without making real major changes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just people got worn down.
Yeah, maybe, yes. And maybe the voice of the head coach got old. Yes, I think all of that stuff's in play. And I think it's perfectly suitable because I like James Jones. I really do.
I do, too.
He's different than any other general manager I've seen in basketball. And I think that Matt Ishbia, they've certainly found a working relationship. And when I say what's interesting about this is James Jones' ability to go with the flow, you know Matt Ishbia is involved. Adrian Wojnarowski even reported as much. So as a GM, as James Jones, you could either put your hands up and go, wait a minute, buddy, I got this. What are you doing? Or you could accept that as your new reality.
That's exactly what I was just going to ask is, do you think that James Jones has as much power as he did nine months ago?
Clearly not.
And there's plenty of GMs that would not accept that.
But
somebody looking over their shoulder,
yes.
or that they don't have true ability to do whatever they want, and they'd say, I'll go somewhere else.
It's a great point you're making, because what that tells me is that Matt Ishbia trusts James Jones's sincerity here, his motives, and that is to win a championship. Because if you were worried about things like power, control, authority, then you're not necessarily in it for the right reason. I mean, winning would be part of that reason. But to me, this feels really interesting, but in a good way, that this is kind of shaken down the way it is. Because I do think that this is confirmation that Monty Williams bears more blame for what went down than most people want to assign him to, because Monty has got a really good reputation. He's got a lot of friends among NBA national writers. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sitting here trying to throw shade on him, because Monty Williams was very good for a few years here in Phoenix. Very good. Brought my partner to tears. That's how good he was.
From winning a game in a bubble.
A bubble.
But it's also among those same writers that you said that are very respectful of what Monty Williams has done. It's also very widely regarded that that situation between he and DeAndre Ayton, there was culpability on both sides. And a lot of it fell on the coach's plate.
No doubt. And again, it always falls on the coach's side. Yes. Coaching NBA players is very, very difficult. If you're a head coach, the playing field is not level to begin with. It's uphill for you to begin with, and if things get out of control or it gets derailed, you're just done. That's the way it works in the NBA. So either way, this is just another step in, wow, let's get these NBA finals over with so we can turn the page on this season and get back into the business of winning a championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Arizona Sports and TruSpec Golf are teeing up Dad this Father's Day. Text Dad to 620-620 for your chance to win a custom-fit driver and a foursome at Talking Stick Golf Club, courtesy of TruSpec Golf. That's Dad to 620-620. Coming up next, we'll give you the latest from the Cardinals. Week 3 OTAs. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Well, just we have kind of all things are new this year.
Yeah.
You know, the buildings, you know, it's getting some renovations done to it. And, you know, where things are just a whole new staff. I have a new, you know, new running back coach, new head coach. Everything is just all different. So it's kind of like if we're trying to build this up and all these new pieces are here, they had nothing to do with, you know, the previous year. So it's like kind of why even talk about it? Why even bring it up? Let's just focus on what's this year's mission, you know. And so that's just kind of where we're at with it.
It's James Conner, Arizona Cardinals running back. Sort of distracted by the musical choice here. Talking with Wolf and Luke yesterday about this year being the new year, the past is the past. I'll say this. I love James Conner's attitude. I've loved it since day one. We all know his story, overcoming cancer and in his career, and he's been an exemplary member of the Arizona Cardinals. And if that attitude can permeate throughout some other things, maybe the Cardinals do better than we thought they would. He's been a leader, a total pro, but there's a lot to overcome for this team, certainly, to turn this ship around at this point.
Yeah. No, I think that if there's anything to maybe be positive about, if you're James Conner, it would be maybe a much better offensive line in front of you and a real commitment to run the football. And that seems to be what they're talking about. And why wouldn't it be? If you're starting the year without Kyler Murray and Colt McCoy and Clayton Tune are your quarterbacks and David Blau are your quarterbacks, then yeah, I think you would probably want to hand off the ball as much as possible. And so, and I think James Conner is shown to be physical. He's not been a big yards per carry guy.
No.
You know? But I think it's his attitude is what people have rallied around. You know what I mean? The ferocity in which he runs with.
Especially that first year.
Oh, yeah. The touch, the red zone efficiency of that guy, yeah, it was incredible.
Some of those receiving touchdowns as well. The one-handed catch he made against Chicago. It took it in for the score. I mean, yeah.
Didn't he score 18 touchdowns?
Yeah, his
that
first year here.
That's a big number.
Yep. Colt McCoy also spoke to the media yesterday, and he said, yeah, James Conner is going to do really well in this system.
Yeah, I think James will be good in this system. You know, there's a lot more, you know, we stayed in like 10 personnel, 11 personnel a lot, right, with Cliff, and that was sort of our identity. I think here, you know, we'll implement more two tight end sets and, you know, running the football and having more like checks and alerts and things like that will get James going, hopefully get him in the right looks. And the offensive line has done a tremendous job this offseason. I think that's been the best part of everything is Clayton has got those guys, you know, dialed into, you know, what we're doing, who we're blocking, different fronts. You know, we're seeing a bunch, you know, from Nick in the defense. So the offensive line has done a really, really nice job this offseason with all the new stuff. And I'm really pleased with where they're at.
Yeah, it's an interesting, because Colt McCoy saying it there and focusing on the running game. James Conner's made similar comments recently. Hey, we're going to run the ball a lot. This isn't going to look like the Cardinals of years past. And, you know, Colt McCoy there takes the opportunity to pump up the offensive line, which we both talked about, you know, in the months of roster construction here. It's not a weakness on this team. It could be one of the strengths of this team. Mm-hmm. But do they have the running backs? You know, I think you need a stable of running backs to be a successful running team in the NFL. James Conner is a proven NFL commodity. Other than that, Corey Clement and Keyonte Ingram. I don't know if...
I think Keyonte Ingram has got promise, but you're right. That is not a distinguished group of running backs. No. So I think they're looking at the bell cow. God, I hate that term. That model. That model is what they're looking at. Give James Conner the ball 70 to 75% of the time. And see what it looks like. I don't know. I'm not sure what to expect from this offense, because at times over the past couple of years, and again, I think we're all assuming Colt McCoy is either going to inherit this job or win this job. And there's value to Colt McCoy because he's such a good team guy, and he just brings good vibes. You know what I mean? Yesterday during the press availability, he told the story about how one of his boys, he wants a dog. And Colt said, you can only get a dog when I retire. And so his son said, well, Dad, can you retire? And Colt's like, well, son, is that what you really want? And his son is like, no, not really, Dad, but kind of.
He wants the dog more than his dad.
Right. Yes. He wants the dog. So, yeah, so it basically, you know, it's our the Cardinal fans' gain is, you know, his son's loss for the moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll get the dog. So my point is this. There's value to Colt McCoy being your quarterback because he always says the right things. He brings good vibes all the time. Teammates like him. Responsible, accountable, smart, puts in the time, prepared, all that stuff.
Total professional backup.
Yes. Total professional backup.
But
you can't leave that last word out of the phrase.
But will that be the case in week one? Is Colt McCoy preparing to be the week one starter?
No, I don't think it changes my mentality. You know, I think for me, you know, my number one priority is learning the system, right? It's new. It's different. There's things as a quarterback that you got to know that other people don't have to know. And, you know, you ultimately with the ball in your hands make everything right. So there's a lot of thinking going on out on the field, and a lot of, like, first time I'm seeing plays, okay, like, you know, incomplete or not, or complete, or a touchdown, or whatever, you know, I go back and watch, you know, across the board, did he win, like, just understanding and processing it. And then, you know, in my mind, like, I don't know if Kyler's going to be healthy or not. You know, I think we all certainly hope that he is, but if he's not, I'm 100% going to be ready to go.
Yeah, he will be prepared to be the week one starter. And it might, look, depending on the length of that absence for Kyler Murray, you could see a scenario, Bic, where Colt McCoy is the starter for the first few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Things don't go well. You might see Clayton Toon mixed in there.
Uh-huh.
It might be quarterback by committee until Kyler Murray gets back.
Right. So then you ask yourself, okay, what kind of weapons does Colt McCoy have around him, and who exactly might be able to shine this year with this football team? Now, Marquise Brown obviously is inheriting the number one wide receiver. Can he do it? Can he be that guy? I guess we're going to find out, right?
Uh-huh.
Michael Wilson has been one of the early talking points. Greg Dortch, you know what I... What a Dortch! So, will they have enough weapons is basically what I'm... Trey McBride, he came on the last couple games of the season. Was that legit? Is there actually going to be more growth from him? And what is that going to mean to this offense? Will they have the requisite amount of skill players that actually, you know, can scare a defense? I don't know. I know this. When you look at the Cardinals, you would probably say objectively, safeties, that's where they're the best at, especially if Buda Baker plans on playing football. Offensive line, probably number two, right? And I'm not counting special teams. I'm just talking offense and or defense right now. When you come to edge players, skill players, You just talked about the questions in the running back room. I definitely think there's lots of questions surrounding that.
Yes.
Same with the wideouts, and you would hope that tight ends would be a strength. And this is kind of why, you know, I think that Colt McCoy probably gets this job by default, because just because he's got that calming experience, get the ball to the right place, kind of do. Unless my guy Clayton Tune just lights it up in training camp.
Would have to light it up.
He'd have to light it up.
Yeah. Because Colt McCoy is here for a reason.
Yes. And for reasons like this. To come in. But Colt McCoy has not been shown the ability to stay healthy. He's had concussion issues.
Mm-hmm.
He's, how old is he now, 36?
Yeah, he's getting up there.
Okay. And so, you know, it's there's a floor and a ceiling.
He'll be 37 in September.
Okay.
And we know what happens to Arizona athletes when they hit 37.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I take it back.
37.
Yeah, 37? September 5th.
Oh, that's before the opener.
Mm-hmm.
Crap.
How old is this kid? I feel bad. The kid's going to be like 18 years old by the time he retires. I have to get a dog in college or something.
You still want that dog?
No thanks, Dad.
No thanks, Dad.
Congratulations on a great career.
Pass me the beard trimmer.
I'll pick you up at practice.
Coming up next, some people promised a robust market for DeAndre Hopkins when the Cardinals cut him. That hasn't been the case so far. We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
It's going to be pretty robust. Maybe the Cowboys may not be interested, which actually makes sense. They added a veteran receiver, Brandon Cooks, early in the offseason, kind of fills their spot there. There's going to be several other teams interested in DeAndre Hopkins, especially the really good playoff caliber, Super Bowl contender type teams. You think about it, if you're looking to add one final piece, might cost a little bit of money, and I would say Hopkins is going to get real money. We'll see if he's able to get what Odell Beckham Jr. got with the Ravens, but certainly he's going to command a legit salary. Could he be the final piece? Certainly that is a question that teams will want to answer, and that is why those kinds of teams are looking at him. And obviously there were a couple teams that looked into very hard trading for him before the Arizona Cardinals ended up releasing him. If you're wondering about the timing, we'll see. Certainly things can happen.
That's Ian Rappaport from NFL Network on the market, or perceived market, for DeAndre Hopkins. And he mentioned at the very beginning of that soundbite, Bick, the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys, whenever a big name becomes available, they're always linked to them. Doesn't matter who it is. They had that weird pursuit of Odell Beckham Jr. for like half the year last year. Decided not to go down that road. Beckham ends up in Baltimore instead. Jerry Jones, yesterday, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, asked about the organization's interest in DeAndre Hopkins. Here's what he said.
What about DeAndre Hopkins, free agent receiver?
Yeah. Don't dismiss any possibility. It's unlikely.
Well, that was convincing.
Well,
hell, he's also getting up there in years, man.
Yeah, he is. Look, they did add Brandon Cooks. DeAndre Hopkins is a way better receiver than Brandon Cooks. Two different types of receivers. Brandon Cooks is more of a stretch the field kind of guy. So maybe the Cowboys do materialize later on. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Ian Rappaport also in that same report said, look, I won't be surprised if this lasts until right up until the beginning of training camp, which makes perfect sense for DeAndre Hopkins, a guy who doesn't want to do these workouts.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, why would he want to do that? Why would he want to come in and you know, assimilate himself with the team when you don't have to? Yeah, listen, I do think that at the more time goes on, there will be a robust market. Who wouldn't want to add a piece like DeAndre Hopkins? What I am going to watch, as I said before, is there any change in the way he is as a teammate or as a practice guy? Because, you know, I don't think he gets the kind of terms he got from Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim pretty much anywhere else. Because I think most other organizations understand the folly and the pitfalls of all that. So, you know, there's rumors that the Patriots might get back involved, the Browns. There's a lot of teams that are not on the brink of winning that I think, obviously, D-Hop is going to try to use to leverage to get to where he wants to go. The issue is where he wants, the places he wants to go don't have a lot of money at the moment.
They don't.
Now they've got to do stuff. They've either got to cut somebody, move furniture, restructure dudes. There's a process now to accommodate him.
Yep. Jaguars head coach Doug Peterson was asked about the possibility of bringing in D-Hop.
I mean, it's hard to speak on guys, obviously, because we got a really good room right now, and it's hard to add someone of his caliber and his talent to a room that's already talented, you consider everything, but at this time it's not a reality for us to bring someone like that in.
See, that's an interesting answer there. It's difficult to bring in somebody of his talent to a room that's already talented. This isn't a talent thing. This is strictly a salary thing. Because you said it, who wouldn't want to bring in a player of his quality if you could afford it?
Yeah. Listen, I agree with that, and I also think then it's a matter of what does DeAndre Hopkins really want out of this year? Does he want to go and try to win a championship, reset his value, and get a long term deal next year? Does he want to do something like that? I do agree. It's probably not going to be anytime soon. There's really no incentive for him to get into the grind right now,
unless I think that his future of his career is trending towards Odell Beckham, where it's just going to be a series of one-year deals now for the next maybe 3 years, going from team to team that, needs that receiver to go off, like, a one-year $15 million deal for the next 3 years to three different teams.
I wouldn't be surprised by that either, and especially this year with, the difficulty his salary demands could cause a team under their cap. Certainly a one-year deal makes more sense. Now, will he get $15 million? Again, I would much rather have DeAndre Hopkins than Odell Beckham Jr. on my team. And maybe had he been available, the Ravens go down that road and trade for Hopkins as opposed to signing Beckham. But, I wonder if he'll be able to get that much money in the open market.
Well, and you've got to wonder, too, at what point in time does DeAndre Hopkins start to lose a little bit of what he's got? Now, he's not the fastest of guys. He's more of a I'll catch anything in my vicinity kind of I'm open even when I'm not open kind of guys. But guys like that even, they get to a point where they just don't have it anymore. And he's right at that age where star wide receivers begin to lose a little bit. But again, his game is not speed based, where Odell Beckham Jr. is kind of a little bit
more
based.
I would agree.
A little bit. So it's interesting. I look at the culture and watching the Chiefs at the White House, you realize that they don't necessarily need they've got such a great vibe. You saw the whole thing where Travis Kelce tried to go up to the microphone and Patrick Mahomes came up and took him away from it. I thought to myself, man, that is great. Have you ever had a guy or somebody in your life save you from doing something really stupid like that? Like Patrick Mahomes did to Travis Kelce?
Still waiting.
Still waiting? Yeah.
If anyone has anything to say or forever hold your peace.
So I think this is a question because DeAndre Hopkins is one of those singular talents that he's just known as kind of a lone wolf mercenary kind of guy. And if you've got a really great culture, you've got to make sure that whoever you add doesn't negatively affect that.
That's why I wonder maybe Cleveland is the answer. Because they don't have a very good culture, don't seem to care about that, and he does have the previous relationship
with Deshaun Watson,
and that might be the one team that does give him like a multi-year deal.
Maybe. And it's I keep hearing that now that the price has dropped and now there's no compensation involved, the Patriots are definitely going to be invested. If you're DeAndre Hopkins, you would really have to have a shortage of options to go to Mac Jones and say, okay, this is where I'm going to go reset my career. That to me just doesn't make one bit of sense.
There's another story that's been percolating this offseason in the NFL, and it's this whole string of suspensions and investigations, players being investigated for gambling. There's another one out there. Isaiah Rodgers, a cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts, engaged in pervasive violations of the NFL gambling policy, including wagers on his own team. This became news yesterday. The report came out and said a sportsbook account was opened in the name of an associate of Rodgers, and roughly 100 bets were placed over an undisclosed period of time, with mostly small bets, but one low four-figure bet. Man, the NFL's got to do, and the organizations apparently have to do a much better job of educating players on what is okay and what is not okay.
Well, yeah, listen, I think that you can blame some of this on education. I'm sure that they've done a ton of education. What they've done here is they have created this. All sports leagues have created this, and all sports leagues knew what they were getting into. When you legalize sports wagering and it becomes as prolific and proliferated as it's become, you don't think you're going to have players go, okay, I'm getting in on this. Uh-huh. Absolutely you are. So the NFL can act a lot of ways. Surprise is what they can't act, because this is the deal they made. This is the deal they made. When you create a platform for legalized sports wagering all around these athletes, and then you expect the athletes, not for you, you're the entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the stuff, that's for everybody else, but not you. And you can do it on your phone. Good luck with that.
That's the band.
Good luck with
it's
that.
It's so easy
good
to
luck
do.
With that.
It's so easy to do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these athletes we know are sports fans. Mm-hmm. A lot of these athletes we know are thrill seekers and love stuff like gambling. And
oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, listen, there is all of that, and I think I'm sure there's been plenty of education, but this is just really a natural evolution. At first, there were, you know, the dude who played for the Lions. Oh, man, my bad. I wasn't thinking. But now Isaiah Rodgers, the rumors that he was betting on his own team.
Yeah.
So now we've gone one step further. Now the next step is finding somebody who bets against his own team. Now you're on the third rail. That's
the last place the NFL wants to be.
Well, that's when the NFL becomes Jared's favorite sport. Wrestling. Fixed. Staged.
The first one was Calvin Ridley, really, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The Falcons do. That's right.
That's a full year.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
and they definitely they fired that one off as like a warning shot to everybody else.
Okay, maybe that's
and
what
since
I was thinking
then
of,
there's
yeah.
been like that's several that, since then.
And that's what blows my mind is they saw that someone as good as Calvin Ridley got a 1 year suspension mm-hmm. and
he's still doing it.
And they're still doing
yeah.
it?
It's well because wild to me. Yeah, well and then you think about how many athletes are having friends place bets for
right,
them.
Like this
yeah,
corner.
Right. I mean that to me, especially the ease of it all, yeah. you're just asking for trouble and the leagues knew this. But hey, give us that revenue stream, we'll deal with the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll deal with the competitive integrity issues. Don't worry. Just give us the
just
money.
Just make us that money.
When they inevitably pop up. Coming up next, Phoenix Suns putting together quite the coaching staff. Now the work turns to the roster. What will it look like, and will a couple of key pieces be back? We'll get into some possibilities and reports next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.